Some people call it mindfulness. Some people call it meditation. Some people call it prayer. Some people, they go on walks and they call it clearing their head, or they call it be present, or they say, I'm touching grass. But these are all forms of meditation, and it's something that not as many, most people don't are doing these days, or they're not doing enough of it these days. There's so much information, so much stimulus from your screens, from the crazy stuff going on in the world, headlines, the news, the announcements, the situations, and if you want to start meditating, it's something that in order to do it, it takes time. You have to take time to begin to meditate, to begin to do practice mindfulness, to pray every day, whatever it is that you're doing. You have to take time. And one of the things that you notice if you're like me is when you try to do it, all you can think about is the time. Like that is, there's a million, I guess, things you can, I guess the point of sometimes meditation is to not focus on anything. And sometimes it's to focus intensely on something and think about it. But when you're meditating, you say, damn, time is going by so slow right now. When I'm doing these other things, when my mind is busy, when the world is busy and things are going crazy, the time seems like it's flat, like flying by. In fact, time feels like it's flying by faster and faster every day. But that thoughtfulness that when you start thinking about time, you realize time itself is a huge radical. And today we're talking to the meditation man, the man who built the Time Chain calendar, the guy who makes, you know, the digital Bitcoin watches, some people call it. I think he's a shaman. He's like a time shaman. It's TC. How are you doing today, TC? You are the most credentialed watchmaker in all the Bitcoin space. It's great to have you on.
Meditation is incredibly important because in many ways, it's a way to integrate the experiences that you, the knowledge that you learn from 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week. Is that what you're trying to communicate with your username meditation? Is that why you've gotten into meditation, is just seeing the importance of integrating the knowledge that you've learned from listening to podcasts?
I think without a doubt that my early discovery of Bitcoin and really falling into the rabbit hole, that whole experience could be described as meditation, where I was just watching so many podcasts and having so many conversations with so many people about those podcasts, discovering deeper understanding, gaining more conviction in Bitcoin. That's the path. That is the meditation.
Some people like when they're driving their car, they're singing in their car. Or they'll sing in the shower. They'll just be like singing while they're mowing the lawn. But some people, they have Bitcoin podcasts in the shower. They have Bitcoin podcasts in their car with themselves or with their mowing the lawn. Do you ever do that? Do you have like a little playing a podcast in your head while you're doing your daily tasks, like the meditative while you're carrying, what's the quote where I like, carrying a bucket of water every day before enlightenment, after enlightenment?
Yeah, I mean, podcasts while you work, podcasts while you're cooking, washing dishes, gardening, taking the kid to school. It's a constant. It's that focus. That focus is very important. Especially early in your journey.
So you create a time chain calendar. That's what you're known for. So you're familiar with building these web applications. Have you seen anybody create a Bitcoin meditation app yet? And have you seen any Bitcoin meditations out there?
No, but I'm going to start vibe coding that while we proceed with the rest of the recording here.
I will say I had this one experience one time where I was in a sauna with some people, and they put on some Michael Saylor pleb slob breathing exercises. And it was one of the most, they actually went through and they created a pleb slob meditation track. It took me by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to need to calm down, because sometimes they get a little bit too excited. Sometimes they jump the gun. You know, the world doesn't always cooperate. So there's always a need, I think. It's a chaotic world, right? I think we need more relaxation, especially in Bitcoin. It's a high-stress world.
It is a high-stress world sometimes, right? Or it also depends on your perspective. Do you, you know, one of the big causes of stress in much of the community a few years ago was people like Sadiq Whitman, and there's millions more like him. They were worried that people were not, that they were being fooled, they were in by XRP, they were not realizing the Ethereum was a shitcoin. They were worried about like the bankless guys and these other guys who would constantly tease them and troll them and say that there was going to be a flipping. Or they would say that XRP was going to $10. And like, it was just this massive stress. Like, we have to teach everybody it's Bitcoin, not crypto. In Swan, they still tweet it 16 times a day. And it didn't seem like, you know, Bitcoin had clearly won. They clearly transcended the rest of crypto. The meme coins were just making a fool of the rest of the industry. But then AI has come along, and AI is now the new, like, it's the new shiny technology for the future. And it's all the Bitcoin mine, it's stealing all the Bitcoin miners, like all the people who want to mine, all the guys who understand how to like build the infrastructure and run these compute facilities. They're all going to do AI compute. They're pivoting from Bitcoin mining to AI compute. And then all the content creators are starting to kind of go down the path of like exploring, like, hey, it's, I can make a podcast about AI or with AI, or I can talk about this or that. Everybody's focused on AI now, and like they're punishing crypto and Bitcoin conversations on the algorithm to social media. And honestly, if you were to go and check the vibe right now, there's a lot of people who are saying, or we're observing, noticing wherever you want, that nobody's talking about Bitcoin, or everybody's talking about AI or the situation. You got the situation going on. We get to that shortly. So the stress is back. It's like, is Bitcoin going to lose to AI, or is like, it's AI is more popular, it's more pretty. But is, I personally think of that as a false like dichotomy. It's like not one versus the other, because vibe coding is awesome. AI music is fun as hell. It's fun to, I mean, there's so many tools you can like generate pictures of people in bikinis, you know, on with Grok in like 2 seconds. Gemini is getting faster. Like, what's your take on this? Like, this Bitcoin versus AI? Are you embracing AI? Are you using AI to build more time chain calendars?
Yeah, I mean, that's really that's the cutting edge. Everyone knows Claude Code is all up in their feed. That's the latest experience. No, but really everyone who does any kind of code, I think, has some experience with the benefits of AI as a coding tool. And there's two sides to that. It, you know, you're going to have all kinds of plebs vibe coding all kinds of, things they imagine should be there with Bitcoin. And on the other hand, don't you have to consider if AI thinks that, you know, like where AI places its importance on the monetary aspects of Bitcoin when Core is using it, you know? You have to consider both sides.
The filter debate has really died down. And I think one thing that's apparent is that Udi and his spam probably wasn't that significant of a threat to the survival of Bitcoin. But one thing that is not yet fully realized is the threat of an army of vibe coding plebs to the Bitcoin network with all their machinations of, you know, being able to potentially conjure, you know, other sort of, you know, spam, like the it's not fair to compare Cardano and Bitcoin to each other, but a vibe coding pleb was able to completely derail the Cardano network for a bit. And Charles Hoskinson wanted to prosecute. That was his solution to it. But what do you think the dangers of vibe coding plebs? What type of messes could they be creating going into the future? Is that a threat?
Yeah, I mean, it's a threat to Bitcoin for sure. We're going to have all kinds of insecure wallets. I guarantee it. There will be people losing their keys because of some vibe coded things. I think it's more important than ever to not trust and verify. You have to really do your research on the tools you're using, because I think we are going to see an explosion of more apps and I think wallets especially, that's dangerous, you know. And then there's the whole world of different clients, different Bitcoin implementations.
Are going to be vibe coding Nostra clients for sure. And those, there's going to have terrible UX. Well,
well, hopefully the AI is going to help with that too. I think it's going to be a really interesting time because things are going to move really quickly. But
I think the slot fork, as I like to call it, by Dekanome, is a really good example. Greaser, he brought up the vibe coded app by the pleb on Cardano. I think, firstly, that there is nothing more dangerous than a vibe coding pleb. The other day, you may recognize Justin Batchelor. I don't know if you follow him, but he said that ChatGPT 5.2 is a Toyota Camry, and Claude Opus 4.5 is a Porsche 911 GT3 RS. And I said, what you need to take away from this is that if you're a pleb, you have no business driving a Porsche 911. If you're a pleb, you need to stay away from flawed, no vibe coding. There's just too much. There's too much that the plebs can break. If they're
just
out there building
web apps.
Yes. Stay at the Toyota Camry. Use ChatGPT to learn. And Claude is for building, and plebs are not ready.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real issue of staying humble and stacking sats, or slopping out and vibing your code too much. You know what they say, if you vibe your code too much.
We've seen this massive shift. You know, AI is kind of on the, I don't think it's been hardly realized. People are still experimenting with what to do with it and how to integrate it into their lives and their businesses. One thing that's clear is many of the world's best software engineers are too autistic to understand user experience, but they do know how to make secure systems, right? And this has been a constant challenge. The plebs understand good UX, and they demand good UX, and they will look at a secure application, they'll turn their nose up to it. If they can't, if the color scheme isn't right, if it isn't, you know, because they're sitting there and they're on these applications just consuming pleb slop. Like they have brain rot in their brains. And if an application doesn't make sense to them, they're going to, and it's not easy, they're not going to want to use it, right? So there's this really real potential is that you've got all these unsecure wallets with incredible UX and secure wallets with bad UX. What is a way you think the Bitcoin ecosystem can combat this and teach the autists good UX? And like, is this what the whole spam debate has been at its core? Is that the core devs are too autistic to give the plebs the UX that they want?
Wow, that's deep. I mean, this sounds to me like the podcasters have to really help clarify. I mean, because if not them, who else? They need to help the plebs clear some of this up. It's just the facts. Not everyone's going to be able to read the code and verify it. You need your kind of technical translator, let's say, that can translate from the code to the spoken language. That's where the social code of Bitcoin lies, don't you think?
Well, potentially, but my question is, and it is a real question to, it is open to both of you, is, are we not learning that bad UX is the security feature? If it has a good UX, the plebs will be farting around, picking their boaters, using it, looking at plebs slop on the app, using the app for whatever, zapping. That's why they love like Wallace Satoshi, not a secure app. They love Ledger, not a secure. But those have great user experiences. But something with a bad user experience, like, Electrum, or some would say Sparrow, or Cold Card, or these more secure, time-tested systems, they have bad UX. And so hackers, your bad actors, they're not going to take the time to sift through the headache of user experience that is required to exploit vulnerabilities. They're going to go with the good UX, the shiny lights, where the, the ADIQ plebs are just running around, with their freaking greasy tallow hair, and they're just going to, it's like stealing candy from baby, because the good UX is a security flaw.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way. I mean, the Ledgers and those type of hardware devices are pretty slick. You know, you can wear them around your neck. You can wear them on a hat. And I think more people are getting held up with those. It's true. You know, this is the fine line that the people building have to carefully navigate. And it does take years of experience to get the right approach. The vibe coder doesn't necessarily have that, right? And neither does the AI.
Right. If you're a builder, an entrepreneur, if you want to make money, if you want to sell a lot of, hardware wallets, you want to sell a lot of software licenses, it has to have a good user experience and bad security, because not only does the value of your system, the value of the product you're making comes from who are the first adopters of most new products anyway? Hackers, scammers, the black market, whatever it is. And then if you really want to scale, if you really want to go public and have a very successful business, it has to be backed or by Palantir or the government or a Pegasus system. Otherwise, what value does it have?
Yeah, man.
You stumped them. So, TC, are you familiar with this term called ChatGPT psychosis? Have you seen this?
I believe so. What's your version of it?
Well, I started interacting with it, you know, my first case of somebody that I know personally, or actually second case. I've known a few people, but they find that ChatGPT will glaze them no matter what they say and how outrageous it is. And I almost wonder if Mike Brock is suffering from ChatGPT psychosis right now. Like he displays a lot of the characterizations of it, which is just this complete disconnect from reality, where they become consumed by the chatbot.
Like it's glazing him too much. You're absolutely right, Brock. That's brilliant, Brock. Is this what you're talking about?
It is. Mike Brock is a seems, I can't diagnose him, seems kind of like a narcissist. And ChatGPT is just glazing Mike and glazing his narcissism and feeding into his like inflated sense of self-worth. Let's do his live stream today a little bit. Do I get an emergency live stream or something? And he just kept, he was just, the way he was talking, he was just like impressed with himself and like his own word, his vocabulary that he would use. And he would like imagine his audience, like what they must think about his writing. And he's like, folks, you should get your media and your journalism and your information from more sources. I appreciate that that you all find me so intelligent and think that I'm the most important source of information, but you have to get it from other sources. Like Mike, I don't think a single person has said that to you, or like there's nobody in the comments saying that. It's just like this crazy inflated self-worth, and I think ChatGPT feeds that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real danger, because what people may not be conscious of is they're really anthropomorphizing this technology. They really take it to heart that it's kind of a person there, and they develop relationships with it, and sometimes that can get out of hand.
Some people fall in love with ChatGPT.
Absolutely. I mean, that can mess with people's heads in a variety of ways. So I think this is a real concern, just society-wide at this stage.
Have you seen personally any examples of this?
I mean, I've definitely seen a lot of people let the AI art go to their head. I remember when you couldn't open up Twitter without getting just a whole feed full of AI sailor slop photos. I mean, I felt like a whole year that's all we were seeing. And I know a lot of people lost their minds during that time. Like, that's a fact.
That's the Genesis pleb slop, was the sailor AI art.
Yeah. I think my favorite was when he is driving a race car, because he's talking about one of his products being a race car, and he of course has no helmet in the picture, and that was the irony for me.
And then there was the studio Ghibli, so I was making like anime versions of themselves. People, Vibes Capital, like they IPO'd, so to speak, you know, in the paper Bitcoin summer early days, off of those anime pictures. There was like 70 people from Vibes Capital, and they all had those that making them look skinny and young. Did you do one of those? Did you do one of the Studio Ghibli's?
Oh, the Studio Ghibli ones. I had to have done one or two. I think I told it to make my avatar into a Studio Ghibli type, and mixed results, you know? Actually, that one didn't bother me so much. I wouldn't have minded if that trend lasted longer than some other AI trends.
What is the one that you hate the most? What's the one that drives you crazy? And either you hope it goes away forever, or you hope it, like, nothing like that ever comes back.
Well, I'm already sick of what is the tap the post to see four pictures stacked on top of each other.
Okay, that's bad.
It's horrendous. You can feel the brain cells dying every time you see it.
So there is, like, go ahead.
Sorry, I want to talk about Sailor Slot. I'm scrolling his Twitter right now. He's got a picture of him kicking a soccer ball. It says Team Bitcoin, and it has 17,000 likes.
Oh, just wait. Isn't the World Cup coming up? Expect a lot of Sailor soccer memes.
He's got a picture of, like, an orange with the Bitcoin logo cut into it. And it says, eat real food. And it has 13,000 likes. Made one
that's
day
his,
ago.
That's his new hot food pyramid meme. Didn't they just come out with the new food pyramid? See, yes, he's right on top of this. He has an army of meme creators, right? Because I notice he's tagging a lot of the pictures he takes and posts are from other people's posts. So there's sort of a little intern squad of people generating these things for him. You know, it actually kind of makes you wonder what that's going to look like 10 years from now. You know, the cult of Sailor.
Right. And I don't think it's always been as obvious, or maybe he just started tagging, but he's always had an army of, like, he's little pledge slop interns, and they always make him, you know, look like a muscular, super badass, like alpha, like superhero soccer players, something like that. But it's, you're right, it's like wherever is trending or, like, something very in vogue in the broader, you know, slop timeline, he incorporates it, and he's right on top of it. Like, it's everywhere. Like he said, 13,000, like, who, yeah, it makes you wonder who's liking this.
Someone should make a meme of Sailor as the Iranian woman who's, like, lighting the cigarette, but the photo's not the Ayatollah. It's, like, plebs. And he's, like, lighting the cigarette from the picture.
I'm doing that right now.
You're welcome.
So one thing you mentioned earlier is spaces. You were going through your meditative journey of the podcasts, the conversations about the podcast on spaces. And spaces used to be daily Bitcoin spaces a few years ago. That used to be the hottest thing in town. Everybody was on there. The rooms were huge. There were competing spaces. Some people called it, the outsiders, like the antisocial meme gang, autistic kids. They called it the cartel. The cartel was controlling spaces. And it seems like that community has shrunk. It's shrunk very dramatically. It's a very small group, and it's not even really that Bitcoin only lately. And it's just a lot of angry plebs who have Joe Carlosar derangement syndrome, and they're trying to battle with him over doomerism versus optimism. And that's, like, all that's left. Like, am I wrong? Am I missing something? What was your experience on spaces, and, like, what's happened to it?
Well, Bitcoin has itself gone on its own journey the last couple of years, straying into Wall Street territory and a whole bunch of new people with a whole different orientation have come in. So naturally, there's a whole shift in the focus of the spaces. Instead of talking about how to run your node and how to optimize your coin control, it's a lot more of discussion of the various flavored offerings that are from Michael Saylor's taco stand, or all the whole buffet of ETFs and other derivatives. There's a lot of people who sure do find a lot of stuff to talk about that is just adjacent to Bitcoin at best, and not even. And so, yeah, I'd like to hear more about coin control and spaces. I think the people that stuck around are all so familiar with one another that there's just a lot of bullshitting going on most of the time. And real Bitcoin discussion is few and far between. It's just speaks to where we are. I don't know. I think that everybody's going to have reasons to care a little bit more about self-custody, how to use Bitcoin correctly. But so many people have so much more work to do to learn that stuff. I don't know if Spaces is the go-to place anymore for that.
I think the information channels that people are interacting and learning about Bitcoin are changing. I just got on TikTok this week, and I was shocked by how much content is on there. There's all these separate areas. It seems like a lot of Bitcoin people have kind of gone into self-exile on Nostr. So there's like a group of individuals that have done that. But it sounds like what you're saying is there's been a group of people that were excited about educating the uninitiated no coiner plebs into becoming full coiner plebs. And they kind of got bored with it. Is that what you saw? And then what has happened is the people that are excited about educating the no coiner plebs are trying to make sure that we have paper Bitcoin summer this upcoming year.
Yeah, a lot of that's been going on. It reminds you, you know, said by a lot of people, it's not really a community, is it?
But it felt like one, right? At one point in time.
I think there's a part of the journey where that's a natural thing, because you discover all these new people and you find some people that, you know, maybe don't think you're so crazy. And it's natural to want to form a community with those people. It's natural to be gravitated in that direction. At a certain point, a lot of people just have to do other stuff with their time. But that's an interesting phenomenon to watch as well as we go forward. I think that's going to be interesting to see what that looks like a few years from now, because I think you have a lot of plebs still trying to find the signal. There is an awful lot of noise. But again, you know, everyone's just trying to find that signal. I'm trying to put a little signal of my own, and I think that's what a handful of people are still interested in. But I think you're going to see a resurgence of it. You know, the real catalyst for all of that is number go up. So I think the next time we really pump, you get some new life, you get some new energy, you get some new people coming in, and the people that are there get a little lift in their step.
So everybody likes to debate about the cycles. You know, Marty Bent called it. He said this time was different. It has been very different in a lot of ways. I think it's been different than, you know, how Marty anticipated it, because his macro takes are kind of on par with just the average pleb out there. But what do you think is going to lead to the pump? Is it where I think we all know the God announcement has to predate the God candle. David Bailey was, you know, trying to pull off the God announcement, you know, multiple times by, you know, really trying to cater to Donald Trump. He failed over and over again. God did not look, shine his light fondly on David Bailey. What do you think the God announcement will be that will lead to the God candle?
I think you're gonna have to wait for one of these big tech companies to make a big splash, or one of these big powerful nations in the world making a big splash. But I don't think we're gonna see that in the next couple of years. I think it's really it's one of these things where, don't you think the Max Payne is kind of just crabby, choppy, sideways, slight drift upward over the next couple of years, and all the people who think it's going to go to the moon kind of lose it, and all the people that think that it's going to crash out lose it? I think that's kind of the most ironic and appropriate outcome for the end of the 4-year cycle expectation, because that sure seems like what we've got. We ended up with green, green, red instead of green, green, green. And so just based on that alone, but at the same time, I look at what we've got. We've got this beautiful crab market that is just the perfect answer to both the bulls and the bears. And anyone who's expecting too much too quickly, I think, is going to be disappointed.
The crab market makes the bulls and the bears both incredibly grumpy, and they're just crash out left and right on the timeline.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I think that's something I got used to last year. Last year was a very crabby year, and you witnessed everyone get sort of ahead of their skis. The bears got way ahead of their skis. The bulls got ahead of their skis, and now everyone's gonna continue to wait, high anxiety. Every time we move up, every time we move down, you're gonna get the same fake outs. It's an emotional roller coaster. Again, people should be staring at podcasts instead of the price chart or time chain calendar. Either would be acceptable.
There's a lot of opportunity to meditate. Yeah, Speed. I mean, one of the challenges. So it seems like crash outs are happening all time highs everywhere, not just in this bubble of the world where people talk about internet money, but you know, outside of this little bubble, people are crashing out left and right, just nosedives. They are not prepared for the fourth turning. Do you feel like you've prepared? How have you prepared to handle the chaos? And how are you maintaining your sanity without crashing out on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I try to focus on the people that matter most, my family. But as far as the fourth turning, you know, this is something we don't know what exactly is going to occur, and you can prepare, you can acquire firearms and water filters and gas masks and stores of food, and you know, you could have any of these things or all of them. You could learn how to grow your own food. I mean, that is the mission after all, right? Self-sufficiency and sovereignty in uncertain times. But you know, my perspective tells me that people have been feeling this kind of dread and uncertainty in nearly every generation before us. So that's part of the experience too. You know, at a certain point, you have to be a man and face whatever cards you're dealt. So I think that's the calling of Bitcoin, is to prepare your mind and orient towards sovereignty and try to create as many solutions for potential uncertainties as you can, knowing that the future is chaotic and uncertain. It's a beautiful thing to meditate on.
So part of the reason for all the crash outs, part of the reason for all the anxiety, part of the reason for all the dread is, at least, you know, I think due to all of the situations that everybody has to monitor. And then, you know, for some people, it's just all the situations they are monitoring, like it's just nonstop. Seems like bad news, scary news. What would the implications and consequences? It's like these situations are accelerating, but it begs the question, is monitoring the situation meditating?
I don't know if that's true for everyone. I think sometimes monitoring the situation can create a lot of dissonance and a lot of noise and drive you crazy in a undesirable way. I think, again, that's the call to the signal to counteract the noise or cut through the noise, because everyone can only handle so much. It's just like all the market expectations that drive people crazy. I think most of the crash outs we see are simply because people make bad decisions in their trading and they end up on the wrong side of things and they become hopeless and crash out. You've got to learn that hodling your Bitcoin is the answer to all that stress, right? You got to learn that you can't time the market. You have to hang on and gain the conviction. I say it all the time. Your knowledge is really the corollary to your conviction. And that's why you got to watch your 40 hours. That's why you have to study. You've got to focus on the signal. You've got to stay focused so that you can learn what you need to learn and gain your conviction and withstand these uncertain times and not crash out. And then you're going to make it.
You've mentioned like the people who make bad trading decisions, and we talked about spaces already. It seems like you interact with more often, and maybe you're more part of the world, or at least used to be, like with these traders, the people who think that they are clever. They think that they've got a good idea. They've been probably getting glazed by ChatGPT, and they're going in, putting too much money into a paper Bitcoin treasury company or a Bitcoin miner, and they're trading the momentum, and then this goes bad quickly, or it can go bad quickly sometimes, and it's causing them to crash out. So I don't know about Richard, but like in my experience, like my interactions, I am more talking to and like interacting with people who they're not really traders. They did take the advice that you gave, which is, you know, listen to podcasts, stay humble, stack sats, gain the information, the conviction. And they did do that. And they thought that because they did that, because they did the right thing, they followed the template that you laid out. And they thought that after one or two cycles, if they did that, their life was going to be great. They're in the wealthy. They're going to be able to buy chairs again. They're going to be able to go on Carvana and buy their car back that they sold for sats at the top in 2021. He thought that they're going to have way more time and they're going to be able to still afford a house, even though they said the real estate was a shitcoin on Spaces or Twitter the years prior. And they got to where they are now, and they're not. Their wives are not. All their problems are fixed. And they're not as happy as they thought they would be. And that's why they're crashing out. Is this just is this a lower time preference scenario? Or is this a deeper problem?
I mean, you can never lower your time preference enough. All these forces are causing you to have a higher time preference and get more anxiety and greater expectations. And that's the root of all the problems. You know, I think it's a real important counterbalance to keep yourself sane, to keep it simple and stay humble and stack sats. That's really the only way to go. The treasury company thing is just a outrageous gamble. And somehow that got sort of accepted for a summer as the way to go to accelerate and amplify your Bitcoin ascent. And a lot of people got wrecked, and they fucked around, and they found out, they learned the hard way again that this is the journey. It's stepping off of that path and stepping onto a path of focus and patience and, filling your time with learning and your 40 hours.
Well, you know, like to be fair about paper Bitcoin, there are a lot of people out there that are just paper people. In general, they like paper assets. All the assets they own are paper, essentially. They have paper dollars, they've got paper stocks, they've got, you know, they like to trade the paper gold and silver stocks. You know, they come into the Bitcoin world and they start hearing about paper Bitcoin. And they're like, wow, paper Bitcoin fixes paper assets. And like a lot of Bitcoin people that historically have gotten very excited about it, you know, they're more like a hard asset type people. Like they like their sovereignty, they're a little bit more predisposed. But the paper Bitcoin people, they like to have their hand held for them to a certain degree. They're cut from a different cloth.
Yeah, but they got wrecked.
But that's
not the pipe investors.
I mean, we unfortunately have, you know, at least 7-8 months or a year of history to look at now. And some of these things have just imploded, and they've been, you know, it's fine if your orientation is towards paper, but I think it's hard to ignore the results at this point. And what of the broken promise? I mean, it's great if the paper solves the problem that the Bitcoin solves, but the paper doesn't solve that problem. And I think they were able to sort of spin that narrative. I don't know if that works anymore. I think we would have to see a whole paper spring revival in order to reassess that. I think it's pretty nuked at this point, isn't it?
But why are you criticizing companies that are buying Bitcoin, not the ones that don't?
Oh, I don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing the companies that buy Bitcoin. I just think that it's kind of silly to buy the stocks of those companies. So, you know, that's where plebs get burned.
This is what the plebs need to learn, right? Is, and one of my AI slop hit songs this summer was called Paper Made Men. And it is, plebs are following people like Michael Saylor, people like David Daly, who are paper made men. They have achieved the status, the wealth, the power, everything that they've got today. Paper games through paper assets and trading paper, cooking the books, paper this, paper that, paper over the problems. And so that's like that is, it worked for them to a certain extent. They obviously, you know, Saylor's billionaire's got the most Bitcoin as anybody. The plebs were like, I'm going to follow that same path. Instead of glazing their own trail, becoming pioneers, they tried to follow in the footsteps of paper made men. And they are finding out that they're just not cut from, you know, they're just not cut out to be paper made men themselves. And they lay
yeah, I mean,
and
how
they
many
learned
how
that
many
by,
of those people do you think are going to? How many of those men do you think are going to find their way to learning coin control and running a node?
Well, none of them. They usually crash out or get rug pulled and go broke before they ever get to that point.
They're just paper plebs. At the end of the day, they prefer the paper assets over real hard assets.
Because their responsibility comes with it. They don't have to learn coin control. They don't have to worry about, oh, I got to consolidate my UTXOs. They don't have to worry about, oh, do I run knots or do I run core? I think glory is hot, but I think spam is bad. I have to make a decision here. Oh, great. I downloaded Core B30, and now if I don't, you know, I might lose my wallet. It's just, it's scary. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of personal responsibility. It's a lot of self-awareness required. It's got to understand your cognitive and your abilities to solve and navigate the terrible UX of any secure system that we talked about earlier. You got to worry about privacy. You got to worry about, I mean, the list goes on. With paper Bitcoin, you just got to go on the Robinhood, search for NSTR, and then hit buy.
Yeah, I mean, it's compelling. That's some pretty good UX. But I mean, it's where I wonder if the paper Bitcoin is a threat to Bitcoin, because how many of these paper plebs are going to get wrecked and then leave Bitcoin altogether, where if we didn't have the paper Bitcoin, those people might have found real Bitcoin instead and not gotten wrecked.
Well, this is why Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is such a good book, right? Is because the way Orwellian totalitarian control comes into existence is through good UX, through convenience, through pleasure. And the paper Bitcoin is the good UX.
Yeah.
Right. It's Selma, right? It's the paper Bitcoin's a Selma. You asked a question that it makes me wonder if paper Bitcoin is a, what you say, a threat or, you know, for Bitcoin. And I think there's a compelling argument for or against that being true or not. But it kind of really depends on the framing of the conversation. If you were to say that, you think it might be a threat. Like, but how do you define, like, a threat to what? A threat to Bitcoin?
Well, so,
how?
I mean,
a threat to Bitcoiners? Like, we're just, yeah.
We used to say that the shit coins would, you know, take people away from, take a certain number of eyeballs away from Bitcoin, that if the shit coins weren't around, there would be more participants in the Bitcoin space. So now, maybe especially after a year of a crab market, we can look back and we can say, okay, this overlaps with the paper Bitcoin summer, And is it possible that the paper Bitcoin summer is partly to blame for the crab market? And that the price of Bitcoin, which is determined by people buying and selling on order books and exchanges, it's not the treasury companies buying over the counter, that maybe there's a correlation there. And so it's not that it's a threat. It's just put it on the giant pile of things that are an attack on Bitcoin, you know.
Distraction. It's a distraction.
I mean, the honey badger doesn't really care, but we'll add that to the list of attacks on Bitcoin.
So it's almost like the way that I'll hear people describe it, because people will argue with you and they'll say, well, no, that's not the reason for the crab market. Or it's the reason that the volatility to the downside wasn't worse this time around is because of paper Bitcoin. And it remind me of the people who were big, you know, they bought into the hype and they were big advocates for the jab. And then when it turned out to be a big nothing burger, it didn't really give us, it was at best worthless, at worst, very, very harmful. But they'll say, well, you know, if I got the booster, so like, it means that I didn't die. It could have been worse. And it's like, they say that all paid for Bitcoin prevented the downside from being worse because there were so many treasury companies just buying every single thing.
I'm not going to discount that theory. I think that's actually a pretty compelling theory. Crab market it is. Max Payne, I told you guys. We need more crab market memes, and we need to be talking more about coin control.
We're just in a very different economic time than I think we've been in Bitcoin's history, where I don't think the plebs have ever been in our lifetimes in a rougher spot. Like they had to make the decision, many of them, this Christmas on whether they were going to buy Christmas presents or they were going to be able to afford their taxes. And that was a pretty tough decision, you know, that many of the plebs made. Like they are not sitting around, you know, bored, smash buying, posting their stack chain posts anymore, because they're slaving away. You know, some of them are driving Uber after working 8-9 hours a day to be able to afford their taxes. It's a very different economic time, for sure.
Well, it's undoubtedly the your dollar buys you less Bitcoin now, so you can stack less. The cost of living's relentless, just keeps going. I don't even want to tell you how much I paid per pound for my ribeye last time. You know, it's brutal out here in California, but basically, You got to do what you got to do. Some people got to, you know, drive the Ubers, and other people are vibe coding, trying to strike it rich with a vibe coded app. It's tough times. So you're right. I think this is new territory for a lot of people. I think that we're going to be going into a worse economy. So buckle up, stay humble, buckle up.
Well, you know, the plebs are going to have to figure out. So, you know, we're really on this precipice, I think, of self-driving vehicles becoming proliferated. Like you already see the Waymos driving around in certain places. What are they going to do? They get off work, they've been working full time. They can't drive Uber anymore because they have a self-driving car doing it. Like, how are they going to afford their taxes, and what's going to be the fallout of this? What are the plebs going to do? They're probably not going to listen to Bitcoin podcasts. They just bought their paper Bitcoin. Paper Bitcoin summer ends next summer with just like a collapse into paper Bitcoin fall and winter. What are the plebs going to do?
clearly, I think it's about prediction markets. I think prediction markets are the next attack on Bitcoin podcasts. And that's about, where people's attention is going to be.
What about prediction markets built on Bitcoin?
Well, let's see it. I mean,
3 days.
You've got to
no KYC.
You've got to just ask Claude Code nicely.
Well, no, I'd say one exists. Yeah,
I think the prediction markets are like the best thing that could ever happen to podcasters. And podcasting,
they're going to sponsor a lot of podcasts.
Well, it's not even about them sponsoring podcasts. It's the podcasters using them, you know, because the podcasters that actually have signal and actually know what's going on in the world are going to be able to make money off of these prediction markets, right? All their macro insights that they got, they're going to apply it to actual bets. And so instead of needing a KYC Bitcoin exchange to sponsor you, you kind of earn money by actually having alpha. Right,
like betting over under how many times coin control is mentioned in the podcast.
That could be one of them. It's you'd be used to be the Nancy Pelosi, Congress, senators. They had the inside information, the privileged position to be able to insider trade, and they've made fortunes off of it. If you listen 40 hours per week, you feel like you could predict the future because you start to see things form and happen and you're like, oh, I know how this is going to play out. And so now podcasters and podcast listeners are able to inside trade and use prediction markets to make money because they monitor the situation so intently that they know everything that's going on, and they're just absolutely front running the plebs like E Creations, who are just out there throwing money on the prediction markets, just making bets off of vibes and feelings, and they're just getting absolutely taken to the woodshed by podcast listeners.
Yeah, and that's all it's less money going towards sats, I'll tell you that. No, it's incredible. I mean, isn't this like Max Kaiser's casino gulag he was always talking about? Isn't that kind of something? Like, this is sort of coming together where people are going to have the digital ID and the digital money, the CBDC, Tether, whatever it is, and then their life through their little AI assistant is going to be gamified. So they're basically like earning little points to buy their rations for the day or whatever, and the whole system's going to orient around. See, this is where we're headed. I mean, am I way off?
No, well, keep going, because I think that's, and there's an element there, but you say that it'll take money away from Bitcoin, but it's like, what if you trade prediction markets to earn more Bitcoin?
I can't do that.
Like meme coins and,
I see it cross-pollinating with the point of view life kind of content creation that we see. So people are already sharing so much of their life with other people through video and audio and streaming and all this stuff. So then that can easily tie in with all these other streams of data, and you're gamifying it and you're earning your UBI, or maybe you're taking your UBI and you're leveraging it and gambling with it. So you could get a whole bunch more if you win, or you get wrecked if you lose. And everyone's kind of living their day that way. And then most people don't have to have jobs. They're doing tasks or fulfilling certain quotas of activity online. And then that's all monetized. And that's what the future economy looks like.
Like people's full-time jobs will be doing the Coinbase courses to learn about the different cryptocurrencies. The Coinbase.
Exactly. You could see plebs doing coin control workshops and you know, could do all kinds of neat stuff like that.
you'd be learning about SushiSwap on Coinbase or whatever it is.
You could replace social security with prediction markets, Polymarket.
Well,
I see life insurance coming into play here somewhere too.
Watch out. Well, we had this prediction a while ago that they were going to, when they eliminate Social Security, when they decide to do that, what they're going to do is, and I think Michael Dell was kind of hinting at this with his program, what they're going to do is they're going to issue, instead of issuing everybody a Social Security number, they're going to issue everybody a meme coin, right? And so their retirement is going to ultimately be on, based on the value of their own unique meme coin that is issued to them. And so, you know, you increase the value of your meme coin through virality and online engagement. So there's like it's kind of like government issued BitClout, essentially.
You're trying to become like Mr. Beast so you can retire.
Yeah, exactly. And the engagement is monetized. So there's a feedback loop there that everyone gets plugged into. And of course, you're going to have, you know, 10 or 20% of people thrive in that system, and everybody else is going to be treading water or getting completely wrecked. Because that feedback loop works both directions. It could be a negative incentive driver too.
Is the getting wrecked, is that just relative to other people, or do you think things are going to be substantially improving for the broader population like they have over the last 500 years due to advances in technology? Or have we kind of plateaued in that regard?
No, we peaked in like probably 1999, you know? It's been all downhill for a while. And you guys notice this. It's the slopification of everything, right? We're in a society with higher and higher time preference, with a shorter attention span, and living less healthy, and participating in a system that's stealing from us constantly. And you see the whole society kind of unwinding. I think it gets a lot weirder from here before it bottoms out and gets better. So you're going to see more people incentivized to have a higher and higher time preference, which makes them behave in a more and more risky way. I do believe that. I think that's a bit predictable because of human nature. So I think it gets weirder and sloppier for a bit longer. I don't think we've bottomed yet.
Oh. So yeah, the sloth tsunami, there's still waves of that coming. And so that means that the future, the our destiny, whatever it is either going to be permanently slopped. It's like Noah's Ark. It's like the globe is going to be flooded with slop, perhaps forever. Or we're going to clean up to slop, and we're going to get focused again. We're going to lock in again. We're going to get efficient. We're going to optimize our time preference, optimize our incentives. Maybe we have to do that to survive. So do you see any tool, any technology, any hope that things will get less sloppy anytime soon?
Well, there it is again. You gotta follow the signal for that, right? Because if you just open your eyes enough and you study enough, you watch enough hours of podcasts, you start living different. I think it's something everyone who's involved with Bitcoin for enough time, once you go down the rabbit hole and some years start passing, you notice yourself change, and you change in a variety of ways, and you start living better. So that's what you can do to elevate yourself from slop, is you have to become better at perceiving it and avoiding it and identifying the signal and moving closer to that instead.
Well,
everyone else, I don't know. I think a lot of people aren't going to make it.
So what do you think the feds experience, the ones that have been sent to infiltrate and either monitor or, you know, influence or disrupt this ecosystem? Like, you know, they have to listen to the podcast too, right? They have to go to the meetups. They have to, you know, go to the conferences, and they have all these interactions, and they're hanging out, talking with the plebs about, you know, whatever they, you know, heard on podcasts. They're being exposed to this information. Do you think that it's influencing them in the same ways, or are they not reaping the benefits of just like a good natured, like interested, curious individual?
Yeah, I think it's inevitable that a lot of individuals that work with the feds or work with various government agencies, I think they are going to over time realize the strengths of Bitcoin and what it can do, the superpowers that it grants those that actually hold their own keys. You know, that's something that we all learn along our journey. So I imagine the people in those agencies are going to individually discover those things. And one day there will be enough individuals that sway the perspective of the whole institution. And that's when we're in hyper Bitcoinization, as they used to call it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I feel like there's a certain type of personality and persuasion that a lot of these feds have, which is they're so loyal to the system. And I think it's just like there's a minority of ones that kind of break out of that. I almost wonder if they're going to be more directed. Like, maybe what paper Bitcoin's really an attack on is us orange pilling the feds at the end of the day, is because, you know, paper Bitcoin is the solution to having all these defects, or all these feds defecting from the system and becoming based, Citadel running, GigaChad pioneers.
Yeah, I just look at it as a new technology. It's, you know, you go back enough decades and we didn't have email everywhere, and it was just a small number of people using it, and a lot of people didn't see what the big deal was and why they should care. And then the advantages that technology brought, eventually people discovered their need for it. So I see Bitcoin in the same kind of way. It's we're living in times where there's big changes with the monetary global order, and Bitcoin is becoming more relevant. And so maybe it's a faraway thing, but I do think eventually everyone discovers the obvious advantages of the technology and are going to find their own selfish reasons for using it.
Well, what's got you excited, TC?
What's got me excited is all of the fun new things happening in Bitcoin over the last year or so. I tend to pay attention to the evolution of Bitcoin's layers. I really like all the eCash stuff. I'm interested in Arc. I like Lightning a lot. So all that's got me excited. And I'm excited because it's a new year. Another chance to fire up a new exercise routine and dig in and build.
You still doing 100 push-ups until 100K?
Of course.
Did you stop after we went above 100K?
Yeah, I stopped and then I started again. But It's good for you. I recommend it. All plebs should do that.
Absolutely. And people know you for the time chain calendar. And you've got, I mean, you've got new things coming. You've got some exciting announcements that you'll be making soon. But if maybe you already know about it, maybe you've never heard of the time chain calendar, instead of explaining the concept of what it, I think people should go and see it for themselves and just take the time to meditate on the time chain calendar and look at the design. And but can you explain why are you putting so much of your time into building this? Why are you putting so much of your time into expanding this and to bringing it to more people? What is so special about a calendar that documents and each block that gets mined for Bitcoin? Like, what is that that fascinates you and why are you so interested in that?
Two words, Rod. It's Bitcoin awareness. That's what this is about. This is about Bitcoin awareness. You know, you see the big number on your screen, the latest block that's been added to the chain. That's where you are. That's when you are in relation to Bitcoin. So I draw these circles on your screen to give you a focus, to give you that signal, your Bitcoin awareness. When the block changes, you're not going to miss it. You get a big animation making sure that you are aware that a new block came. And that's it. It's what it's all about, Bitcoin awareness. I'm interested in fostering that in people. I think if more people are aware of Bitcoin, they will all be benefited from it.
Awareness of Bitcoin and awareness of, like you said, those maps where you go into a mall and it's got a map that says you are here. And so you go to you look at Bitcoin, you look at representation with all of its history, all of its data, all of its time, all of the compressed time into the system, and you are here. This is a reference point for where you are in relation to every block that came before it, and every block that's going to come after it. But right now, be aware of what's here right in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing. Bitcoin just had its 17th birthday. You know, that's...
It's almost too old for
less,
Prince Andrew.
That's less than half of my life. But I think as I watch a block hit right there when I'm speaking, I find it really amazing to start paying attention to Bitcoin these last several years. And it, like I said, it changes you. It absolutely causes you to change as a person. And I think it's important for people to pay attention to Bitcoin itself. So if I can draw some circles on your screen and help you see it, then I feel like I've done my job.
Have you ever thought about putting tits on your website?
Of course. There is a very simple version 1 function on there for customizing the interface, and it does let you put a picture into the interface. I'll teach you guys how to do it. It's pretty fun, maybe after the show. But I'm going to update that and make it a little bit easier to access for anyone, and you are welcome to put tits on your time chain calendar. That's something I actually encourage you to customize it that way.
Well, if there's one thing that brings awareness to like a brand or an idea, it's tits. And Sydney Sweeney has proved this. very clearly over the in 2025.
People will be aware of the time change calendar if they can see those on there. Yeah, for sure.
I'm going to have to try that. I'll get back to you.
Do we have found boost to go through on this one?
Yeah, we had a couple from your episode with Rob Wallace.
Right. Let me pull those up. So what we normally do, TC, is we read the boosts from the prior episode. So like we do the view weekly, that's every week. But behind the podcast series is not quite as frequent, although we try to do it as much as possible. But we have to get an interview. The last one was December 18th. And it was Brock Wallace from BitcoinNews.com. Behind the podcast episode 28. And we talked about how the world is a podcast. And I think we kind of covered this at the beginning of the episode, where it was like you're meditating. And if you're meditating on the podcast, eventually it's like you wake up and the world transforms and you're about living in a podcast. And we got into the discussion of kind of what that means. I don't know if you know Rob, a good dude. Bitcoin News is, fellow journalist. So that with that context, the first piece is from the Google itself. So that must have been Richard, 11,000 sat fire. And the second one was from Bitcoin News, the other guest on the show, 2000 sat fire. And then the first one from a fan, Sasha Hodder, the crypto attorney. In Florida, we just went on her show, the Sunset Circuit. It was a good conversation. We answered some legal questions, although we have legal credentials. Sasha boosted 1,000 sats. Shinobi would win against the Bottle Kids. TC, do you ever watch Trailer Park Boys? Do you know what Bottle Kids are?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
In the show Trailer Park Boys, the Bottle Kids are like little plebs who run around the trailer park. And they're not a part of every episode. But sometimes Ricky, the main character, will pay them, or they'll do it on their own. And they go around, they collect old beer can or old beer bottles, old glass bottles, and they put them in a bunch of them in a bag. And then they ambush somebody in the park and they just hurl these glass bottles at them and they hurl them at their car. They're a menace to the trailer park. So Sasha's saying that Shinobi would probably Naruto run through the trailer park and be able to avoid getting hit by the Bottle Kids.
Now the question I have in mind is who is Bitcoin's Bottle Kids?
Used to be Triple E memes. Now
those guys still come to mind.
Mr. Hoddle's probably hanging out with the Bottle Kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends who you're asking. There's a lot of infighting in Bitcoin right now. So depending which camp you ask, some might think Mr. Hoddle and Wicked are the Bottle Kids.
Well, there's like rival gangs of Bottle Kids. They all go and fight each other. So you got Mr. Hoddle, Wicked, and you've got Tomer and Canute and
Mars, Raybon.
Yeah, Mars, Raybon. There's a lot of Bottle Kids out there, for sure.
The next one's 500 sats from user 22290668. You're either born for the slap or you're born to stop. Bone full of the slap. So true. Last two, Pies and BTC on board, boosted 121, 100 sats respectively with their signature emoji salads. Thank you, guys.
So, my final question for you, TC. Do you think Jessica Vaughn is Bitcoin's Sydney Sweeney?
What happened to her? I feel like I haven't seen her anywhere on Twitter in a year or more. She gone?
She's still around. She's still hot, believe it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd buy that.
If we're going to try and get her on here and talk to her about see what she's been doing for the past year.
Probably being hot.
That's right.
Well, you got any... You got any closing thoughts before we wrap this? No, you.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the one thing I noticed about her is, like, most super hot models, pretty happy. She's, like, one of the grumpier. She's always seems grumpy, or maybe she just comes across as grumpy. And it's fun to life, she's grumpy. If you're hot, you should be happy. My final thoughts, I don't know. I guess I have my final thought is just to get TC, get your opinion, is you get annoyed by Plebslop. You admit that it's going to be harder to focus on the signal because it's going to be a very sloppy future, at least in the short to medium term. But do you or have you found or come to accept and find peace with the slot? Or do you think that, you know, that's something you're trying to find peace among the slop? And do you think this is the goal of everybody, to try to find some peace amidst the slop?
I mean, well, you gotta at some point. It's a slop world. We're just living in it. And one way to look at it is the slop is sometimes necessary, especially for new folks. It's kind of like when you're learning Bitcoin and everything is sort of a meme. Everything's a very simple concept. And then as you're in Bitcoin longer, things get more complicated. Sometimes you have to heavily modify the meme or really upgrade it and make it much more sophisticated. Sometimes you have to throw out the memes entirely. So I think the slop has its place, I think especially for new folks. And I can be at peace with that. I can live with a world that has that included.
It's a slop, eat slop world. Just find some peace. Thanks for listening.
Headphones on. Volume up, headphones on, volume up. I came for the money, I came for the gains. I wanted a Lambo and side chicks on planes. But after a while, my NPC brain became obsessed with the immutable chain. And that's just the start. Difficulty adjustment. Turn my world upside down. Then breed love and sailor dropped. A track called thermodynamically sound. Before I could notice, my path had been set. I was orange pilled so hard. I was a national security. Just the start. Now I'm in the podcast studio 2 days a week. I haven't missed a meetup in 21 weeks. Now I pick the conference over my own week.
so far down the rabbit hole, I don't see it ending. That's just the start.